Hello, this is The Lake Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC,
be sure to
join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel Tom Linux Show.
So and we're back.
We'll get started right after these messages.
And we're back. I'm
sorry.
I queued it before the intro was done. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, I can hear myself. Yeah, that's good. We got a stream. Amazing. Okay, how about this? We are live, broadcasting from Chicago, Illinois, and from our new broadcast facilities on Wacker Drive. We're testing out some new remote applications to get our show off and running. It's a little nerve-wracking because these are new tools that we're using, and Kevin isn't here tonight, so if this show turns into a train wreck, you'll all know why. We'll hope for the best. We do anticipate Kevin to call in sometime during the show, but you've got it. This is The Linux Show, broadcasting to you live one last time for 2002. And we'll be bringing you our sixth year of broadcasting come 2003. Absolutely amazing. We do have the whole crew here with us tonight. Well, at least we will have the whole crew once Kevin calls back in. But, Doc, how you doing tonight?
Doing pretty well. It's perfect out here in Santa Barbara.
It's nice here, too.
Isn't it always perfect in Santa Barbara?
We actually had a pretty heavy rain for a while there. We had flooding and stuff like that. Not where I live, but except in the basement. We had that there. And it actually sogged up a couple of Christmas gifts, but they worked anyway. They worked anyway. Life is good.
Yep, but you didn't have a white Christmas.
We did not have a white Christmas, but we can drive to one if we have to. That's the nice thing here. Arnie, can you see white under white in the mountains where you are?
Sure, Mount San Antonio and the Cucamonga Peaks all have snow on them.
Are they skiing up there now?
Yeah, it's funny, Mount San Antonio, which is called Baldy here, is halfway up the mountain is Baldy Village, which is a really, really quaint place, which with a really, really, really great little tavern up there. And you can just drive around there and go up to the summit. And they, Baldy doesn't have any snowmaking equipment, so they depend on Mother Nature, and Mother Nature's been good. They open up the skiing Christmas Day, and I can look out the front window of my house, and there it is, snow-capped Mount Baldy.
So see, for the rest of you guys listening, though, I mean, Arnie lives in Los Angeles, okay? I mean, this is like, or just east of Los Angeles.
Yeah,
in the basement. I mean, we're talking major, you know, L.A. scene here. But,
Baldy is the closest ski area to Los Angeles. And I can see to the east the last few days where the atmosphere has been very clear. I've been able to see Mount Arrowhead and Mount San Gregorio, both of which are higher than Mount Baldy, and they are substantially snow-capped. And there's going to be good skiing up at Mount. Of course, you have to get chains to get up there because of the roads.
Yeah, these are mountains that go up to almost 12,000 feet surrounding Los Angeles. It's pretty impressive when it's clear and you can see them.
Yeah.
Every 10 years when it's clear?
Yeah, it's more often than that, but it's there.
I mean, Mount San Gregorio is over towards Palm Springs, and you can see that the other day.
Look up just Mount Baldy on Google, and so there's some great pictures in the top link. You'll get an idea. It's kind of amazing that you're looking at pictures that are like 10 miles from prototypical Los Angeles by air. Pretty amazing.
Well, on the other end of the country, we have the opposite perspective of Russ Pavlicek, who has been buried by snow for the last couple of weeks. Russ, I won't bug you too much because I know you're monitoring the server. Russ is Kevin for a day.
That's it.
So we're rotating jobs during the course of tonight's show and letting Russ have a whack at the servers. And they just might whack back if you don't watch them carefully.
Yeah, I get to have a Christmas coronary. This is great.
How many times has it snowed in the last week alone?
Oh, jeepers. It's, we had the big snow for Christmas. We had an ice storm about a week before. So it's been joyful. I mean, considering, you know, and of course around here they keep talking about how we're having a drought. And if the drought continues, I figure we're going to have to build houseboats to live in, because this is driving us nuts here. I mean, we got more water than we know what to do with, but we're in a drought, so go figure.
Go figure. I don't know. But we've actually had, the last couple of weeks here in Chicago have been monumentally pleasant. The middle of last week, I'd say Thursday of last week, we had temperatures as high as 58, 59 degrees. Just an unbelievable December. The grass was turning green again. And then lo and behold, sundown, Christmas Eve, sundown on the 24th, a front moved in from the north, and we had a nice little 4 to 6 inch covering of snow that has managed to survive. So we had ourselves a nice little white Christmas without having our typical Chicago blizzard. Normally, if we have any snow at all, it ends up being measured in feet and not inches. So we really, really dodged a bullet this year. But we do have a couple more people joining us this evening, and I will go ahead and bring them on in right away, and so you can at least get them introduced and identify what their voices sound like. But first of all, we've got joining us tonight Brian Proffitt of Linux Today. How are you doing tonight, Brian?
I'm doing very well, sir. How are you?
Oh, I tell you, I could say I could be better, but, you know, I really have nothing to complain about. I've had a great couple of days.
Good, good.
You enjoying your holidays?
Yes, I am. I'm actually on vacation now, visiting family in northern Indiana, not too far from Chicago. And I'm enjoying that snow as well.
Northern Indiana, huh? Not far from me at all.
No, over in South Bend.
Aha, that's a nice area.
Yeah. Also with us tonight is Grant Gross of IDG News, formerly of NewsForge. How are you doing tonight, Grant?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm in central North Dakota, about as far away culturally from Los Angeles as you can get.
Yeah, I know.
That would be fine with me. I have a place in the urban Michigan, which I pine for regularly.
When you emailed me and told me that you were going to be going to central North Dakota and that you were going to be picking up your girlfriend, I was thinking, what do they live in, a NORAD silo?
not quite. My parents live in a town of about 600 people.
Wow, talk about small town.
Which town, Grant?
The town's name is Fessenden.
Fessenden. My mother is from Napoleon, North Dakota.
Oh, that's not too far. That's probably 100 miles or so.
Yeah, that's not far by local standards.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100 miles.
Well, 600 people, they must have had a Norman Rockwell kind of Christmas.
We kind of did, yes. Yes, we did. My sister, my parents, and I, and my fiancé is coming in tonight. We're picking her up at the airport later tonight.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Congrats on a new gig, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. It's going to be exciting.
Certainly hope so, at least.
Well, yes.
It's challenging, for sure.
People in Congress should keep me on my toes, I would think.
Yep, that's definitely going to be a fun gig. Also joining us is Dennis Powell of Linux in Maine. How are you, Dennis?
I'm well. How are you?
Again, doing great.
Doing fine, yes. I heard you a second ago. Now that I think about it, calling from, nice and snowy western Connecticut, where we had relatives here for Christmas, and it was nice, and it snowed for them and all, and then they got up and left for Los Angeles this afternoon on the Big Silver Bird, so it got to be, you know, like a little amusement for them there. And of course we still have the snow here to deal with, and they talked about how lovely it was, and I said that it was probably the equivalent of visiting them in LA and saying that the 7-scale earthquake was what made the vacation memorable.
Yeah. But I tell you, Connecticut, boy, that's going to be the archetypical vision of of Christmas is
the
scenery.
They're you know, Christmas bells on the horses.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And getting up early to go feed the animals. We're on a little horse farm here. And so it's just right in Christmas, although autumn in New England's really about the best. The first time that there's a chilly evening and you smell a little wood smoke in the air, it just kind of stops you in time.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what we're going to do, the show a little bit differently tonight. We are not going to be talking about the hot news of the week unless something has just happened that is really monumental in terms of the scope and scale of the entire year. The purpose of tonight's show is to discuss the annual year in review, the stories that we felt have made big impact on either the IT industry as a whole, for sure open source and Linux development, or maybe in reference of those stories that have had the biggest impact on the website or publication that we happen to be working for. And so, you know, there's a number of different ways that you can take this angle as the discussion goes through. And everything is also, as usual with the Linux Show, a totally open forum. Feel free to jump in on somebody else's story. So Brian, Grant, and Dennis, when it's somebody else's turn, don't hesitate to be aggressive and get your opinion in.
All reporters will be aggressive.
Yeah, I know you will be. But just everything is going to be very informal tonight and kicked back a little bit. But I guess I'm going to go ahead and bring it right over to Doc. And because I've got a starting question for you, Doc, and you may not know the answer to this, but what seems to have been the biggest story of impact as measured by the reader of the Linux Journal? Do you have any kind of graph?
That's a, I'm not really in a position to say, you know, to speak for, you know, 100,000 readers worldwide, but maybe that's part of it. I was thinking that probably the biggest thing has been the success of Linux in the third world, or what we call the third world, especially India. The continuing triumph of Linux over Microsoft's money and PR, and the bribery of, you know, with the AIDS money and all that rest of it over in India. There's a piece right now I just read in a Bangladesh publication that IBM is starting to talk about bundling Linux on PCs in Bangladesh. But they want to make it a worldwide decision, but it's being sort of talked about first in Bangladesh. Well, that makes sense, you know. And they say it's based on the success of Linux in India. And it's not just there. I mean, it's all over the place. It's in Jordan. I think there's a piece that's flashed out right now about in Jordan.
Former coworker Robin Miller just got back from Jordan.
Yeah, Blimo just had a piece on it
days ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Story from India Times hit on Christmas. Government moves on to let in Linux. And I guess the Indian government is said entirely nuts to Microsoft, but basically they're not buying it.
Yeah,
Microsoft.
Just look up Linux in on Google News. I mean, there's Australia, Bangladesh, Jordan, Costa Rica. It just goes on and on. In places where things have to be reliable and there isn't a lot of money to go around and people are extremely resourceful, it's just a slam dunk. And it's one of those areas where, it's one of those things where it's going to be the last to happen here in some ways because we have the most money to spend and consumer marketing is so strong here. The sort of supply-driven common wisdom machinery here is so strong that it's going to take a little bit longer, but it's going to happen. I mean, that's going to be That's sort of my bet for the next year too. Is that by this time next year, we're going to see Linux sold on PCs at Fry's. You know, name brand PCs and not just
IBM is talking about that.
Yeah, IBM. They have to be first at it, and unfortunately, HP is way too much in the pocket of Microsoft's co-op money. It's embarrassing at this point.
Even the people who lead up their Unix efforts are in the pockets of Microsoft.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, you see every ad you see for the tablet PC has this. You know, they're forced to say this thing that you know that co-op money paid for, which is, I think, something like HP recommends XP for all of its desktop systems or something silly like that.
Meanwhile, IBM's been kind of unreliable in terms of Linux, because one of the things that happened in the last year was when they decided not to support it on ThinkPads anymore.
Yeah. It's become, you know, I don't think it's all going to happen at once. That's one reason why I think it's going to be, you know, happening in the third world before it happens here.
On the other hand, Computer World just this week brought out a big article entitled, Should You Move to Linux?
Yeah.
Well, then I think you're seeing a lot of moves toward the desktop in the United States as well.
It's happening slowly, but
yeah.
It's happening.
There seems to be a momentum building from Windows, which a lot of people in the Linux community don't like, but and then Crossover Office and Walmart.com selling Linux on machines that Russ first reported for us, and Sun and Red Hat talking about
really
desktop Linux,
it.
And new releases from Mozilla and from OpenOffice. You know, it seems to be kind of a snowball.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good browsers around these days. I'm using Galian, which is a Mozilla base.
Mm-hmm.
But the Opera browser is really nice. I use that on my Palm, on my Sharp, and that's really nice.
Well, I'd like to focus in, though, on what Doc said is the apparent failure issue. And what I mean by the apparent failure issue is the fact that Microsoft is now becoming ineffective at buying the markets where in the past they have been successful at it. And it's interesting to do what Doc just said. It's just out of coincidence, Doc, if you go to Google, like you just said to do, and search on the term Windows, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are the first three things you see? Number one is, Fendo can't get Microsoft Source is ditching Windows. Next item, Microsoft Windows rival, Linux.
Yeah.
Third item is Judge Order's Java included in Windows.
Yeah, they're drawing flies now. They really are drawing flies, and it's sad. We've often joked at Linux Journal that we've used up all our Microsoft karma for the year, our anti-Microsoft karma. We're just not going to talk about it anymore. But it's pretty hard, you know. They're wounded, you know. This is a sad thing, and for them is that there's only one thing a monopoly can do at a certain point, and that's raise prices. And they're doing that, you know. And that really is a screw you to the customer. There are a lot of big customers that don't want to pay higher licensing fees.
And there's
speaking of
these.
Speaking of the screw you customer, the third link under the news, the third link, the first one, of course, is Microsoft Corporation. The third link is another joke is Microsoft Windows Update site, which doesn't work.
And there's only one place a monopoly can go, and that's losing market share.
That's right.
That's the other thing. I mean, you know, my wife often says, and she's a really smart businesswoman, the trees don't grow to the sky. You know, at a certain point, the thing falls down. And, you know, they didn't need the government for that. All they needed was complete market saturation, and it's done. They can't go any further with it. They're being commodified. You know, I mean, there's certainly, you know, there's a lot you can do with $50 billion in the bank, which they have.
Well, they're chasing after Xbox as fast as they possibly can.
Yeah, but, you know.
Well, that's true, but also when, for instance, they had the apparent challenge from OS 2, they dropped prices all over the place. They made sure that everybody who wanted had any piece of hardware that they wanted to write a driver for, they very nearly wrote it for them. And so, I mean, they know how to deal with a challenge when it comes around. And, excuse me, but so the question is whether they've gotten too fat and greedy to remember how well they did it when they were hungry.
Well, and there's just enough people who don't like them anymore, from AOL to Sun to IBM. There's this kind of this coalition of anti-Microsoft people that aren't exactly working together, but are all doing their own thing to kind of knock a piece off of that monopoly.
And a lot of the success of Linux is in places you don't see. You know, there are the reason that Sun came out with their new boxes is their Linux boxes is because there's a lot of demand by big customers for what amounts to the the old the VT200 and 3270 terminal market, you know, transaction workers who run a browser and email and the company application for customer support or some other thing like that, and they don't need an expensive HP box running the Office suite. They don't need that. Linux is just very handy here. And that's going in by the thousands in some companies.
Yep.
Huge, huge shipments of, and you don't know it. Nobody's shipping operating systems to these people. They're just rolling their own.
Yep, absolutely. Let's jump over to Grant. Grant, what do you think is the most impactful story of the year?
Well, as Ken already mentioned it, I think just some of these moves toward the Linux desktop that it looked like in past years that the desktop was kind of slowly losing steam, and now it seems like steam's picking back up again, from Windows to Walmart.com to the 1.0 release of Mozilla to AOL deciding that they're not going to use IE anymore. There's all these moves away from Microsoft being the desktop and Linux being the alternative. And I think that's one of the big stories of the year. And I think we'll see more of that as it comes along, but I think we're just seeing the start of that move.
Okay, following up on that then,
mm-hmm.
A general theme, I would say, since at least September, it's been sort of, boiling under as a secondary theme almost the entire year. Really, since I first saw my first copy of Redmond Linux early in the year,
mm-hmm.
There's been this sort of undercurrent of, well, has it finally happened? Is Linux ready for primetime desktop? And that has been boiling now, or simmering, on the stovetop now for the better part of 7, 8, 9 months.
Yeah.
And you have just the last 2 weeks seen in mainstream media people starting to talk about, well, maybe, you know, we've talked about it for the last 3 or 4 years, maybe 2003 really will be the year of Linux that everybody has prognosticated and never happened.
Yeah, and I think 2002 was the year that it got ready for the desktop, and I think 2003 will be the year when you'll start seeing people adopt it.
Yeah. Anybody want to agree or disagree with that? Brian?
Well, I think that I'm not going to put a time frame on the desktop, because it even took Microsoft a little while to get, you know, things figured out. But I think, as you know, I think like Doc was saying earlier, when people figure out that they don't need all this extra stuff that comes on a Windows desktop, that they just need the tools to do their work efficiently, then I think the Linux desktop is in. Because right now there seems some kind of mythical, you know, Uber desktop that we must bring Linux up to. And that's not the case. I think there's a middle ground where a Linux can pretty much get that now. You don't need all these fancy extra applications.
Who needs Word anyway?
Well, exactly, but somehow, in the business mindset, people are convinced that word is, you know, the standard. And the problem is, in file format land, it sort of is the standard.
Right.
I hate to say, but it is. Now, whether or not...
The only thing that's become standard is the fact that that Word is incompatible with everything but Word, and it's not. That's not even true.
Exactly.
Word is even compatible with Word.
Right.
The interesting thing is that everybody seems to, well, everybody other than Microsoft seems to be settling on like the Office 98 version.
97, 98, yeah.
97, 98. And,
mm-hmm.
and there's a limit to how long Microsoft can continue to change that file format when everybody else is ignoring it.
I think that's when things really started to backfire for them, is when they started doing, you know, non-backward, you know, me write or me work with words, but when they started doing upgrades that weren't, you know, retroactive, you know, when they the file format changed and it wasn't even compatible with itself. You know, I think that's when businesses started looking around and thinking there has to be another alternative, you know. And I think StarOffice fills that niche very nicely. If you really need that, you know, mega Office Suite tool, if you really have to have it, you know, then I think that that's something that's going to fill everybody's needs.
And I think OpenOffice will be a project to watch. I don't know, over the next year or the next couple of years, but...
I think it's going to be really exciting to watch, because one of the, I mean, when Sony came out and said, we're going to package StarOffice and by, you know, loose definition, OpenOffice, in our European PCs a couple of months ago, I mean, that was really exciting, because that's going to give a huge boost to the OpenOffice project, I think.
Well, I think that the Office suites in general, whether you're talking about OpenOffice, StarOffice, or what have you, I think the impact of those products on driving this overall theme. Was it Brian or Grant who said that 2002 was the preparation year?
That was me.
Okay. I think this is where it was coming from, is those Office Suite products.
Office Suite and browser. Those are the two big things, I think.
I think those went a long way, especially when some of these open source products also run on Windows.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was really telling, and people were putting them on their Windows machines to get the taste of open source. And major in terms of its impactfulness, and I have actually been shocked during the course of the year in the places where I have all of a sudden found OpenOffice products show up. People that I never thought would ever consider moving away from Microsoft have started to do so, and I'm going to inject sort of a self-defeating cause to all this, and that was Microsoft's funding during 2001 and again in 2002 of the Software Business Alliance.
Hmm.
Has driven people away from Word and Microsoft Office to these open.
Well, and their new licensing scheme hasn't done them any favors either.
Yeah. They've done us a great favor.
right. And I hear rumblings all the time of people going, "Well, we're going to pay the license for now, but I'm not so sure about it in the future."
I mean, I've got clients out there that are unbelievably cheap, and a couple of them push the limit on some of their licensing issues with Microsoft, and I warn them, you know, and I say, why don't you just convert to Linux and run open source products, and you don't have anything to worry about it? And they go, oh, no, and then all of a sudden I walk into their office and there's one machine in the corner that they're actually experimenting with. It just has shocked me to no end, and I think it's a real good telling sign, that's for damn sure. Russ, I'd like to go ahead and move on over to you. I know you've got your hands full running the server, but please go ahead and jump in and give us what you feel is your big story of the year.
Well, you know, just to quickly echo some of the sentiments, this was the year that everyone stopped asking, is Linux ready for business, and became the year of where are you using Linux in your business. And like other people have said, that's just going to migrate over the next year as to where the push point is. But the from my perspective, I think one of the a little bit more of a sleeper side to it is this is the year that the FUD changed. In times past, when you were talking about fear, uncertainty, and doubt, you were talking about educating people on open source, trying to get people to be comfortable to use open source, to not be afraid. It was all about learning. This year, the FUD has taken on an entirely different basis, and that's because it is now all about dealing with Microsoft's attacks on open source. And that in and of itself is very significant, because this basically is round one. Microsoft has made a target of open source, and they have begun to attack open source. And I think that in the year ahead, year 18 months, we're going to see stepped-up attacks that goes beyond FUD, and frankly, I think we're going to see lawsuits and patents and yada, 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 trying to shut down open source. So I think that that this has been very significant, because there is a battle now going both ways, and Microsoft has definitely realized that the open source community exists, and they're doing the best they can now to fight back.
Well, I mean, the patent thing is interesting, but I just don't understand what they possibly could patent. I mean, that if there's prior art, and if prior art is defended like it should be, it doesn't seem like they could have any claim.
Well, I think the big thing is that they're going to find anything that they happen to have an existing patent on that might be, and, you know, emphasizing might be similar to something what's being done in open source. And the one thing that they have a lot of power with is they've got lots of lawyers and lots of money to fund those lawyers. And it is not beyond the pale to throw those lawyers at open source developers who more than likely have neither lawyers nor money.
And I think the battle will also be fought on a public relations scale. Even if they never win a legal challenge to open source, just the perception that open source might be some kind of, you know, evil patent-stealing voodoo, you know, they may be counting on that to change the corporate, you know, business mind. I'm thinking about that. I can't remember his name, that security guard in Atlanta at the Olympics, who was, you know, just pilloried because everybody was convinced that he was behind the Olympic bombing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he was innocent. But the perception of him was, you know, very hard to change.
You know? Well, yeah, once all the media jumped on the fact and broadcast that he was the bomber, or he was suspected as a bomber. I mean,
exactly,
you know.
And I think that's something, unfortunately, that Microsoft just might be counting on. Maybe they know they don't have a legal leg to stand on, but if they can drum up enough negative publicity.
Well, yeah, but we get a plenty of, you know, and Microsoft has even pointed this out. They pointed this out in Halloween 1 document that Eric Raymond leaked. And that is that their original idea was that fear, uncertainty, and doubt wouldn't work well against Linux. And what they found out since then, and how many years has it been since that thing was leaked, mm-hmm. is that fear, uncertainty, and doubt hasn't worked. I mean, basically, what happens is they publish something, outrageous lies, and what happens is the flash dot effect. You know, there's you get all sorts of responses, and even when they try to rig the test and try to rig the test, it didn't even work in their favor then, because the only thing it resulted in happening was that the Linux kernel got even stronger because the patches and the things that were perceived to be bad were fixed.
Microsoft has not even begun. Microsoft can start a TV campaign of nice little 30-second spots going around, and actually I think they're softening the world up for it now with the little touchy-feely ads that they started a few days ago. And they can simply have the standard perception, the long-haired, unbathed, dope-smoking hacker, and then they can have pictures of these tie-wearing, efficient guys working in brightly lit offices and say, who do you want to have writing your business's server software? And they can run that saturation for about 3 weeks, and it would hurt us enormously.
No, it wouldn't hurt us at all. People would laugh at that.
I think it would backfire.
All they have to do is look at IBM and look at Sun and look at the other companies doing Linux development.
Well,
and Red Hat and all the rest of them.
I think you're discounting the point he's making too much, because number one, okay, we have just seen an overt attempt by Microsoft to buy a market in India that has failed. Now, the reason why they attempted to do that was twofold. Number one, they could see the Indian market already slipping out of their fingers. And number two, they had the opportunity to do that where they couldn't do that kind of a campaign here in the United States because it would have been deemed predatory and illegal. So their option then is the legal route to do legitimate advertising in the United States. And don't discount that yet, okay? Now, perhaps the dope smoker ad may not work, and that might not be beneficial to them. But don't completely discount that any ad campaign that Microsoft might run will not work, because they've run some enormously successful ad campaigns over the years. Just look at the Windows 95 release. It was an enormously successful ad campaign.
For an enormously successful operating system at the time, where was Linux? Where was the alternatives?
Yeah.
Oh, where were they?
OS 2, it had been out there for 3 years, and it did everything that 95 did. But Microsoft out-marketed them.
That's right. They were willing to pay the Rolling Stones.
Well,
the $10
million. OS 2 that was developed by Microsoft.
Yeah.
No, not after version 2.
No.
There was very
little. No, I know that. But OS 2 was basically an Microsoft product. And when they came out with Windows 95, they decided to, when Windows started catching on with 3.1, they decided to kill the OS 2.
It was before that. The IBM Microsoft divorce took place in September 1992.
Yeah.
Well, there's another pass to this too that we have to remember, and that is that up until now, deflecting FUD was all being done out on the technical level. It had to do with people who were internet savvy and whatnot. Now that open source is actually reaching the CIO, CEO, CTO level, suddenly it's a new game. And the type of cheesy marketing that would be ineffective to the open source developer might be very effective to the executive. There are ways to get to executives that companies like Microsoft are very good at doing. And that's going to be, I think, the new battleground. The thing that we have to be aware of is that they're going to try to go over our heads. They're going to try to go into those areas that they already have the ends. They're going to go into the government. They're going to go to the politicians and so forth. And they're going to go to the executives. And that's where they're going to try to attack next. And we can't just write off the fact that they have these ins and they know how to play the game to some extent at least.
Well, that's true. And that's actually why I think that one of the biggest stories of the year has been what happened with GNOME when they came out with version 2 and things like the accessibility layer. Because there are lots and lots of laws that are being passed in this country and elsewhere that are kind of an equivalent of a computer version of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which require alternate input devices, alternate viewing methods, and so on. And with that, they've really got it. And so areas that were completely shut off to Linux because there wasn't a desktop that really handled it kind of now do, and I think that's going to be a big thing. That, along with more and more governments going to open source, is going to lend a kind of cachet that we didn't so much have before, and I think that's a real important and significant event.
The blind cannot use Windows.
Right.
The blind still use MS-DOS, or if they're a little more tech-savvy, use a thing called Blinux, which is blind Linux.
Arnie, seeing as you've got the floor right at the moment, do you have a major story of the year that you'd like to bring to the table?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, I think the major story this year is the extent to which Linux has seeped into several markets that weren't available. We already knew that the embedded market would be strong, but I think the Sharp Zorus took everybody by it shocked me when it first came out. This was a really nice machine. I picked one up. And now Sharp's marketing is kind of failing. As far as being a generally marketed, they no longer market it in the stores. The new 5600 apparently is going to be marketed direct to companies, but I can't think that wouldn't be a good marketing scheme either. I think that should work out fine for them. I hope so. It's a really nice machine, and arguably the most powerful PDA on the market.
Yeah.
The other one I'd like to basically Hollywood runs on Linux these days. I mean, all the high-tech stuff and the supercomputers and everything, lock that down. I mean, all the big supercomputers now are running Linux, effectively Linux kernels on their base. You know, it's become prevalent.
Well, what I'm going to do...
That's, I think, the big thing for Linux this year, is that we seized the smallest and the largest computers.
I'm going to throw out a couple of topics because I haven't heard anybody bring them up. I'm just going to bring them up, and anybody who wants to jump in and comment, these are things that I have gleaned out of the course of the year and that I thought were incredibly impactful, not necessarily to Linux and open source, but... at least at a tangent because of their impact on the internet community as a whole, because without the internet there would be no Linux. There would be a fairly ineffective open source movement without the internet providing it the tools for the communities of developers to form. So the first...
Jeff, one more thing. Without Linux there would be no internet today.
Well, that's not...
Would be a fire.
That's nonsense. Unix has been around since day one of the internet, Arnie. So
yeah, but Linux has made it cheap.
But it would still exist, Arnie.
Yeah, that's true.
But let's throw a couple of these topics out. The first one, in my opinion, that's a major, 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 major story, is CARP. No one wants to pick it up.
It's huge. And the interesting thing is it's sort of like the Academy Awards. The movies that came out early in the year get a short rap. And CARP came out, I think, in like February or March of last year, and kind of set us all on fire. But what happened in the long run, I mean, it's far from played out. I mean, the interesting thing to me about it is that an awful lot of internet radio runs on Linux, and And it's a, you know, I think it's a huge thing that the broadcast, not the broadcast industry, the record industry essentially shut down, essentially got the government to tax an entire new business category almost out of existence. And none of the libertarians, none of the Republicans, none of the smaller government guys stood up and said a damn thing about it. It still amazes me. And a lot of us know.
No, the Democrats did either.
Not a lot of Democrats did either. As a matter of fact, they were probably more, you know, worse.
Shows the across the board ignorance.
It is across the board. And I think part of the problem too is that just not enough of them died or not enough of them came back. It's kind of in a limbo right now.
There was nobody important in the eyes of the people making the decisions.
Well,
these were little mom and pop places. And face it, little mom and pop don't matter anymore.
Well, they matter, you know.
Well, they matter to me, but they don't matter to some people.
But it's a huge thing, and it's just, you know, it's sort of like in a weird kind of limbo right now. How do you feel about it, Jeff?
I think that although the short-term result for us as webcasters, because this, you know, without question, directly affects the Linux Show, because we're broadcasting on the Internet, I think we lost in the short term, but I think that without question, the game is far from over, and I can illustrate this in a couple of key ways, that immediately upon the outcome of CARP going against the webcasting industry as a whole, you really started to see some earnest commentary coming out of Washington, D.C., that, you know, guys, we really need to take a whole new look at this Digital Millennium Copyright Act thing, because we've done it wrong. And those kind of comments are becoming more and more common, and now further fueled with a week ago with the big DMCA case being thrown out and Dimitri being reclaimed back into society. There's now precedent that the DMCA has gone too far.
I think that'll be an interesting thing to watch in Washington over the next year or more.
I think it's going to take years. This is going to take 5 or 6 years to play.
Also, the DMCA case with Dimitri only addressed the criminal part of the DMCA, and I would expect that we will see that go away. But I don't believe the idiots in Washington are going to make the DMCA itself go away.
Well, also the fact that the RIAA is now viewed upon as the evil, the new evil empire of the Internet, I think.
By
all
whom?
All those things combined together.
By whom?
Well, for a start, the RIAA lost its voice in Washington in the election in November. Fritz Hollings is not going to get anything onto the floor of the Senate.
That's right.
This is true.
That's true.
A really, really big time important point.
Yeah, that's important because Hollings was.
But Hillary
back the wrong horse. You got to remember, Jack Valenti was LBJ's chief of staff.
Yeah, but Hillary Rodham is far from over.
Yeah, it's so whatever's going to happen is going to happen later, or they're going to have to abandon a bunch of people and try to buy a whole other bunch of people, which isn't impossible, but it's certainly not going to make him happy.
Well, and the Republicans are a little wary of Hollywood, so.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. There's another thing. I mean, even within Hollywood, there's a lot of, it's not a unified block. At Digital Hollywood, it was impressive to hear the chief counsel of the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association, which is run by Jack Valenti, talk about how all the lessons they've learned by all of the things that Hillary Rosen and the RIAA has done wrong. You know, they observed that they still have, to a large degree, the goodwill of their customers, which the record industry has utterly lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone. And you know, the movie industry still, and they said that they're not going to try and kill people off in quite as aggressive a way as the RIAA has.
The record industry's also lost the goodwill of some of their recording artists.
Oh, totally. If they ever had it in the first place.
Well,
yeah.
Well, let's look at the phenomenon that this Christmas season has showed us. Is you can go into a store right now and buy an entire season worth of television broadcasting for $19.29. Okay? So you can buy the entire 2001 calendar year of Sex and the City for $29.95.
Presuming you'd want that.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Presuming that you want it.
Or the Sopranos.
Arnie, presuming you want that, you can do it.
Yeah,
okay. I'm appalled that anyone would actually find that marketable.
Your personal taste, I'm sorry to say, is irrelevant. Well,
it's like you could also buy the full season of Friends.
Arnie, your personal taste is irrelevant. it's just totally irrelevant. What I'm trying to show you is the amount of money that was spent to develop intellectual property is comparatively being given away.
That's right.
Okay,
yep.
Where you have a CD that is
how much does the CD cost?
That is produced by the recording industry, where their total development cost per CD is something along
a
line
dime.
33 cents, and they sell it for $16.95.
Well, and then the recording industry's attempts to offer music for download are not very good attempts either.
No.
I tried to join Press Play about a week ago, and it was like $10-$12 a month to download music that you couldn't take off your computer. You had to leave it on your computer.
How'd they do that?
You couldn't burn it. It was against the rules to burn it anyway. Yeah, I'm sure you could if you really wanted to. But the rule was you could download for $12 music, but you couldn't transfer it to any other medium, was the rule. I'm like, this is not... I don't want to pay $12 for that. You know, if I want to download music, I want to be able to burn it on another CD and take it with me.
So this is the solution. You buy the CD and then you...
Right, right.
Capture
it's a pathetic. It's a pathetic attempt is what I'm saying.
Yep. But the reason why I made that comment to support exactly what Doc was saying about the relative difference between the MPAA and the recording industry. I don't want to make Jack Valenti into a saint, because I think that he has his own black feathers that he has to deal with.
He still sucks.
Yeah, he still sucks. He sucks less.
How did he get to be so short?
He's been working at it.
Well, that turned out to be a good one. I want to throw out another one, and I know one of you guys has mentioned this in passing, but I'm going to throw this one out as a short topic that I think has been of enormous importance quietly, and that's the fact that Walmart and Sam's Club are selling Linux computers. It is my opinion...
Are you on the floor?
No, that's the problem.
No, they are too on the floor.
Really?
They are in six stores across the United States right
test
now.
Test market.
They're testing. Yeah.
It's test market, and they're not even admitting that they're doing it, but there are six stores that are.
You know what this says? This says that the web sales have been strong enough to recommend that they expand it, and that is good news.
Okay. And Walmart got an incredible amount of goodwill from the community for doing that on the website.
And do you know what we need to do? We need to find out the six stores. We need to send them over to Rob Limo and have them put them up on Slashdot, and let's see if we can give them some good faith return for their effort.
Not only that, I think people need to support what Walmart is doing.
I don't like Walmart any more than anybody, but if they're doing that, I like them a lot more than I have.
They've commoditized the computer.
And that's fine. That's fine.
I should add that when shortly after Qtrain came out, some of the first things we heard were from ordinary citizens in places like Arkansas talking about what a great place Walmart was and how cool they were in a lot of ways, which kind of blew our minds. There is something, as ugly as they are.
It's destroyed downtown Big Rapids.
No doubt about it. But I'm not excusing the pernicious effects of having, you know, something that big and that cheap and ugly in the middle of a culture. However, they do some things that are remarkably cruel.
They know how to market.
Yeah, I think this really leads into something that I know Doc said earlier, and this was actually one of my predictions going into 2003, which was, you know, I think if these machines take off at Walmart.com and then, as Jeff mentioned, on the floor, I think you're going to see one of the major computer vendors start, you know, selling, you know, Linux-packaged PCs.
IBM.
Yeah, maybe IBM.
IBM's already talking about.
I've talked to people from Dell and Gateway on separate, you know, issues totally. But I'm getting hints and indications that they're thinking about it. The idea of having a non-Microsoft desktop coming out of their factories is not, you know, repugnant to them anymore. And I think that everybody's watching Walmart, which, you know, love them or hate them, is right now the world's largest retailer, according to something I saw on CNN this morning. You know, I think they're going to wait and see. And
they're $200 billion a year in revenues.
I beg your pardon?
They're like $200 billion a year in revenues.
Yeah, and
they're unreal.
That's one-third.
They're going to be the pioneers here. If people are going to say, well, you know, Walmart can sell that to mom-and-pop, you know, America, then maybe we should try and do it too.
What does everybody think about the idea, though, that these Linux preload machines are pretty much low-end machines and so on, and the idea that the perception could be gotten out that Linux is what you use until you can afford a real operating system?
Excuse me, the Mandrake machine offered on Walmart.com is not no skimpy machine.
But the Windows machine...
No, they also offer Mandrake.
Right.
Well, they kind of, which is a considerable, is a very nice little machine. It'll probably clean the clock of most any Windows.
Oh, I agree, but I mean, and a low end machine to begin with, right now will do an incredible amount of stuff. It's just that where they're placed typically in the pecking order. I mean, the $199 Linux machine, which was actually the Windows machine and so on, which got a great deal of press. To what extent do you think that it's created any perception like that?
I think for tech-savvy people, especially those who may watch tech TV or other broadcasting entities like us, I think they're very well tuned in to the difference between the value that a white box offers and what you're actually getting off of that $699 Dell computer, which, although it may have a Dell name on it, is no, in terms of the hardware configuration and the quality, is no better than that $299 computer offered at Walmart. That machine that Dell sold the hell out of during this past Christmas season for $699 is a piece of trash.
Right, yeah, so everything is bottom lined.
Yeah, I mean, the review that machine got on Tech TV by Chris Perillo was savaged. I mean, they were just savaged.
I'm thinking in terms of the general breakout of Linux on the desktop, though.
I don't think you're going to see that in the consumer market. I really think it's going to break out in like the corporate enterprise market.
I think so, too.
Well, it's already happening.
Yeah. Right.
So Ransom Love was right.
Ransom. Well, I don't know if Ransom Love was entirely right.
Let's not be hasty.
Let's not be hasty. I would not want to give Ransom Love too much.
Arnie, let's be fair, Arnie. You would never say anything good about Ransom. So
I would say a lot of good. I would say a lot of good of things about Ransom Love if he had some clue.
in your opinion.
I'd say Linux would not have unfolded the same way if Ransom hadn't done some of the things he did.
Yeah, he's been a very good benefit to him. But
I see he also
said a lot of stupid things.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of our retrospective in 2002 is it became okay to bash the crap out of Ransom Love.
Guys, I gotta go pick my fiance up at the airport, so I'll sign off. But nice talking to you all.
Happy New Year. And thank you for coming on the show. In fact, I'm going to take that as a break point because I really wanted to go around the entire panel and give everybody an opportunity to just sort of say one last thing about the year. If you want to take it as an opportunity to prognosticate, feel free. But let's just go along the whole panel and give everybody a shot. Okay, well, why don't we start with you, Brian?
Well, okay, I think my pick for, like, one of the top stories of last year was the success of Red Hat, that they turned things around and showed that Linux could be profitable. And I think Red Hat 8 was a really good, you know, solid product that they put out. And one of my predictions I've already mentioned for 2003 about, you know, pre-shipped Linux PCs, but another one was I think that Mandrake Soft sometime in the next calendar year is going to have to either, you know, financially restructure or they're going to be gone. I'm really worried about them, you know, from a financial point of view. That's not to say that the Mandrake Linux distribution will disappear. Obviously, that won't happen. But I'm worried about the company itself.
They cannot afford to run at their burn level.
No.
That they are.
They can't. Something's got to change there. I'm really hoping that that new CEO there, whose name unfortunately escapes me right this second, I hope that he can, you know, change things. I had two people tell me recently, in totally separate conversations now, that they're concerned that he's just going to be the caretaker that closes the company down. And I fervently hope that that is not the case, you know. But something's got to happen with Mandrake Soft, you know. And I certainly want them to succeed.
Yep. I agree. Obviously, the model that Red Hat has followed the last 3 years of, you know, tightening up, focusing, has worked.
Mm-hmm.
And those other distro companies that have not really focused, I'm not saying that Mandrake is an unfocused company per se, but there's just no question about the fact that they've gone hat in hand to their users twice now,
right,
in the past year, asking for, you know, a gift to stay in business.
And
that's not the way you build a business.
No, and if their reported debt levels are what they say they are, you know, even if every single person that downloaded, you know, an ISO of Mandrake, you know, donated some sort of, you know, monetary gift, I don't think it's going to approach the levels that they need, you know, not for a sustained business, you know.
Yep.
So.
And Mandrake is as good as they are, and I've heard, in the years since they've been around, I've heard nothing but good tech kudos
mm-hmm.
about them.
Oh yeah.
But basically they're just an x80s. They're just a Pentium class compile of Red Hat.
Yep.
Of course, they branched off from that probably by now, but
I've
never used Mandrake, so I can't comment. But
yeah. Well,
I wish them the best of luck.
Mm. Yeah, I've used the product. I like the product. I just, you know, I'm fearful for the company right now.
Yep. Grant, do you want to come
sure,
in?
Sure, I'll jump in before I get off the phone. I think you guys are right that you'll see Linux shipped on some desktops from somebody, either IBM or some other companies. I think we'll still see some kind of contraction of the what's left of the Linux market, like you're talking about with Mandrake. I think Red Hat's in a good position. I'm not sure about United Linux yet, but I think you're going to see one or two or three companies that kind of survive.
SUSE will survive.
Yeah,
they have the European market. Linux.
Yeah, which is the one that has the Europe, the Asian market?
Turbo. But Turbo's had some problems recently. So I think that you'll continue to see a contraction of that Linux marketplace, but I think a couple of good, solid Linux companies will kind of present themselves and lead the way, and I think Red Hat will be one of those, and I wouldn't quite bet on the other one just yet. Or the other two or three.
Debian will be around.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Debian will be around.
But I'm just talking business.
Yeah.
Linux for business.
Yeah, I'm sort of torn on the United Linux thing, and actually that was on my list of little shorties to bring up to the whole crew here. And I think it's almost an inevitability that United Linux is going to end up just being SUSE and SCO, just because of their market share and the fact that SCO makes a lot of money off SCO.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I rated United Linux as the non-event of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing much happened there.
Nothing is going to happen.
But I think SCO and SUSE may, like Jeff says, may survive out of it, along with Red Hat.
Here's something. How about a prognostication? SUSE will become SCO's Linux.
They already are, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
SUSE does 99.9% of the coding on United Linux.
Right.
And
right.
That's SCO.
Yep.
Oh, good night, guys. Have
okay.
fun.
Night, Grant.
Okay, Dennis.
Excuse me. Well, I think that probably actually the a big story, and it's going to get bigger and bigger, is the developer-user interface, for lack of a better term. Because for ages and ages, everybody who used Linux either was a developer or kind of worshipped those who did. And now all of these new people are coming in. Walmart is selling boxes, and these people are showing up and saying, give me this, and give me this, and give me this. And there was a lot of discussion of that during 2002, and the developers had varying views from, well, screw the user, to, well, let's try to give them what they want. And it's it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out over the next couple of years, and especially now that more and more enterprises are adopting Linux. Places like Zimian, for instance, are obviously, well, it's kind of interesting actually, Zimian's approach, because they're trying to insinuate Linux in along with Windows every place they possibly can to just get a little bite of it. But there are companies that are going all the way that way, and then there are mere users like me who are kind of. It's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic works out.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Doc, do you have a closing comment?
I just I think it'd be kind of fun. I was just running some down to maybe devote the next show to predictions for 2003 and check back at the end of the year.
Okay, I think we'll do that. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. So I mean, I think it's going to be, and in many ways, 2002 I think was inconclusive, and I think what we're saying here together is that some shoes are going to drop in 2003 that were shaken off the foot in 2002.
Yeah, I think that's without question an inevitability. You are starting to see the big players of IT starting to ramp, and so that generally indicates that 6 months out, 9 months out, something big is going to be happening in the IT economy, whether it happens as the major economy as a whole, things are starting to ramp. There's just no question about it. You're seeing more people getting trained on databases like Oracle right now than historically would be the norm for a recession. So I think this is going to be a big year of predictions, that's for sure.
There's lots of potential.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about the economy going sour this year and kind of being a mush-push economy. It's not done much, but there's a lot of potential there, and people are tightening their belts. And this is one thing that I have read the last several months in the IT press is that one of the things they're looking towards is to save a few pennies, and Linux has jumped into that opportunity.
I mean, successful businesses are always looking to save pennies.
Yeah, and this is a great opportunity for open source, and our advocacy has always been good. And I think this is something that we need to keep working on and keep talking it up.
You got the floor, Arnie. Is that your closing comment, or have you?
Yeah, that's fine. I'll take it as my closing comment. This is an opportunity for us, and we should tap it. We're doing that.
Russ, how about you?
Well, 2002 was, from my perspective, was the year that the business sort of became real around Linux, and people stopped doubting that. 2003, I think, is going to be the year that blood will be spilled. And I think that's because the elements from Redmond are going to be stepping up the game. I think there's going to be some washouts within the industry. But the bottom line, I think, is that when we're doing this again next year, Lord willing, we're going to find that Linux is going to be stronger than ever. But some of the players may have changed pretty drastically inside the.
So 2003 is the year we march on Mount Doom, huh?
Yeah, and it will not be without cost.
No, I agree. Yep, there's going to be a lot of the few remaining companies are going to end this year. I think that's no question of it. Well, I guess my closing comment. First of all, Russ, by the way, great job on making sure that the servers don't fall over. So thank you for your efforts. The first comment I'd like to make is, it's really gratifying to see people like Grant. Be able to hang around this industry group. It's a perfect example of the overall trend that we have seen since 2000 of an awful lot of the people that we know that were really devoted have fallen by the wayside. And I'm really happy that Grant was able to get back up on his feet as quickly as he was able to, after the cutbacks at NewsForge, and we're seeing that, really that continuing contraction IT industry wide, so my first comment really is one of hope, and that. Those people who are friends, who are out there listening, that I'm thinking of you, and I'm hoping and praying for a successful year for all of you. And even if things don't come off well, there's a couple of companies that I know of that are just right on the edge right now that some of our close friends are working at. And if things don't go well, don't lose heart, because the IT business is cyclical and it will come back. And opportunity, demand breeds opportunity, and this market will be back. Linux and open source are not going to go away.
There's lots of markets to tap.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a way to make a buck in a free and open economy. And So I have a lot of faith that we will all someday eventually walk out of this with good memories. The last comment I'd like to close with is a comment, for all of the people who have been guests over the course of 2002, and in particular, Doc, Arnie, and Russ, thank you for your participation on the show during the last year. Kevin and I would not have been able to get through this all without our guests and our regulars. It has really made it all possible. And thanks also to the people in the IRC room and for helping us to continue to grow the Linux Show. I know it's goofy that I go into the IRC and I say, tell people to tell 10 friends about the Linux Show. And they have. And, you know, probably the second largest listening audience of the Linux Show of all places is from the tiny little country of New Zealand. We have a huge listening audience there. And so it's really gratifying to Kevin and I that you people out there, the people who listen to the show, people who participate in the IRC, have been so supportive of us. And from the standpoint that we are now, in another week and a half, going to be broadcasting the first show of our 6th year of broadcasting the Linux Show, that just blows our mind. We really are very gratified that we have not ended up being humiliated and people calling us jerks and idiots for doing this thing. So we're real grateful to you coming back every week and supporting us year after year after year. So that's really it. Have a wonderful New Year's holiday, everybody. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas and wonderful Hanukkah or whatever holiday you do celebrate, and do have a warm and safe New Year's celebration. And make sure you come back for the next Linux Show. The date of the next show will be, let me pull up my calendar here, it's going to be the 7th of January, that's Tuesday night, our normal broadcasting date, and it will be broadcast at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time, live to the entire world. So make sure you come back then, and just do me one more favor, everybody, and that's tell 10 friends. And we'll keep this thing growing and growing and growing.
We have a listener from Italy today.
Wow. That's phenomenal.
Ivan, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for listening. So until then, until the 7th of January 2003, everybody hang in there. But as for us, well, we're out of here. Good night, everybody.
Yes, you too can sponsor The Linux Show. Here's an example. Insert your company name here. Is a valued sponsor of The Linux Show. Here's another example. Insert your company name here. Is bringing you this special segment of The Linux Show. Now, thanks for checking this out and sponsor The Linux Show.
People wanna shut you up and make you play it safe. day I wake up hoping the answer will come to me. Sometimes it gets so confusing, I just go back to sleep. Later my mother calls from a job that I never liked in the first place. 4 years of my life gone by, and this is the thanks I get. Feels like I've been dumped by a girl that I never really loved anyway. I'm free to play the field, but it's too soon to get involved again. So I just keep taking my time against the clock on the side. I don't know if where to go. So many things I want to do with the things I know. Why is it anything that interests me won't ever fail? So afraid to make the wrong, cause I do nothing at all. Just watching too much TV, drinking, smoking all day long. Feels like I've been gone for my whole. I watch the rain come pouring down.